Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Duvin, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program as we get set to bring you this program that comes your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. It comes in on Mondays at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, and we encourage you to check out the links that we have to our guests. It's right there on those pages, as well as the schedules page prior to the guest's appearance. And you can go there and find out all there is to know about what the guests have to offer. Today's interview has been a long time coming. I've been putting it off and putting it off. And, well, I couldn't procrastinate anymore. And how appropriate, because this interview is going to be with the author of Beyond Procrastination. Sounds like the title of a superhero's movie. How to Stop Procrastinating Your life, postponing your life, I should say. Same difference, I suppose. Renata Riemond is my guest, and I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having me, Richard.
Very interesting subject, and it is true that we've had quite a difficult time putting this interview together as far as finding a date that works for both of us, and then things come up on either end, and on and on and on, and that's how procrastination starts. Some would say, oh, life was just getting in the way. Well, that's one explanation, but it also is a prime explanation for why a lot of us aren't where we would really like to be. We dream about where we would like to be. We've sought out our life's purpose thinking, once I find that, boom, everything's just going to fall into place. And it sometimes seems like a major struggle just to get things ignited. Case in point, on my own behalf, I'm in the middle, you might say, of writing a book. But I've been working on that book since 2001. So what does that tell you? I mean, I think I need your help too.
Oh, great. Sign on up.
So let's define, first of all, what do we mean by procrastination, and maybe even the converse, what is not procrastination?
Well, procrastination in and of itself just means that we're postponing something and put it off to another day, and that can have very real reasons and important reasons. But usually we use procrastination in the sense that we know that it would be important to do something right now, but somehow we don't get around to it. And that's having negative consequences for our life in general. As you said, like, we have all these dreams and ideas about what we would like to do, but often get stuck in the middle of life and other things take over, and sometimes the most important things actually are left by the wayside.
Is a person who is fairly well organized and who likes to have things in that fashion, who sets up, shall we say, systems within, say, their workplace in particular, they like to have things where they are, and if the thing is used, they want it put back where it was originally, and so on and so forth. Is an organized person one who is typically a procrastinator, or is there a type?
Not really. I think in most cases, when you ask people, have you procrastinated in the last, let's say, week? Probably almost everybody says yes. And the people who say no, I congratulate them. But they might also be self-deceiving. So, of course, we all put something off. So in that sense, there's not really, I mean, psychologists have pointed out some personality sort of aspects that might be connected to procrastination. But I don't find that in my work with people very helpful. I like to look at the behavioral stuff more and to look at procrastination as a process issue and not a personality issue. But that gets us back to your question. So who is more likely to procrastinate? And probably somebody who's fairly organized might be less likely to procrastinate than somebody who's more organized.
Hmm.
But very often, when certain things come up that are difficult, most of us will pause or postpone at some point.
And I'm going to use this as an example from a standpoint of observation. I'm not passing judgment on these people. Would you say that our lawmaking body at the national level, when it comes to doing the people's business, is procrastinating?
Well, you could say that. However, as I say in the book, there always are valid reasons why we procrastinate. And in our case, I think it's just a few people that like to throw wrenches in the gears that are majorly responsible.
So there's a little difference there. I certainly understand that. Now, what about yielding to the universe's timetable? My wife and I moved to Santa Barbara in May of 2006 after we both had lost our jobs. The station I was working for, it was sold. The new owners were not going to keep the old staff. She quit her job because it was a hostile work environment. And the next thing we knew, we had the opportunity to move. And as I reflected on that, I realized that we didn't actually have to wait until we both lost our jobs. But someone shared with me, well, but maybe that's what had to happen for that window to open for you. So we wanted to move, and we've wanted to move for a long time. And it took us that long, if you will, before that happened. Is that really procrastination? Or what about that whole aspect of universal timing?
Well, I actually agree with you. I think sometimes people try to push something too hard, and that the timing has to be right. And in the book, I use the example of Enron. Like, aren't you happy that you didn't get that job at Enron that you were so upset about? Sometimes it's just we have internal clocks, and people who work well with their internal clocks actually do quite well. And again, I would say there are valid reasons for procrastination. Sometimes that valid reason is just subconsciously you're not ready to move forward. And you see that a lot when people are very much focused on one goal, and they push and push and push and actually achieve it, and then all of a sudden realize, oh, they're not ready for it. And that can be, for example, a huge success that, yes, you wanted that success, but emotionally or in terms of maturity, you're actually not ready for it yet. So it's also a certain trust in oneself and one's own sense of timing, as well as sort of the larger universe. Well, maybe it just takes a little longer than I expected, but to learn to trust that.
It certainly brings to mind, of course, my book. Maybe the timing isn't quite right yet, and that's why I've been putting it off. I don't know.
May I ask you about that?
I'm sorry?
May I ask you about the book?
They do. So go ahead.
Okay, good.
No, go ahead.
Now, I'm just wondering, because when I was writing my book, there's also at a point I was getting very upset with myself because I wanted to finish it at a certain time, but I didn't get around to working on it. So I asked myself, what is it that's in the way? And that's actually a good thing to ask yourself. When you find yourself stalled, what is in the way, but very concretely, what is in the way right now? And I realized I was so busy with other things that I didn't have time to actually sit down an hour or two every day to work on it. So I consciously postponed it to another time when I knew I would have more time over the summer. So sometimes it's also important to give yourself permission not to do something as long as you then schedule it for another time when you actually have that window of opportunity.
Yeah, I know that we're planning to take a little trip up north, hopefully to camp out at Yosemite and over the Thanksgiving weekend. And, and I thought, well, you know, that'd be great. Oh, it's a wonderful place. It's not like we don't live out in nature already where we do live, but it's certainly away from everybody and everything. And I certainly would be able to take the laptop if I wanted to and work on it there. And so forth. And at the same time, I'm sitting here going, well, why would I want to do that when I'm going to be in a place I've never been, and I'm going to want to spend time exploring this, and we're only going to be there for maybe 4 days? You know, so already I'm talking about. I'm sorry.
Explore it, rest, relax, yeah. Recharge. Yes,
exactly. And so it's like, okay, well, now am I procrastinating? I'm now talking myself out of even the possibility of spending time doing it. You know, and again, I'm only using this example to try to bring home some of these points that you talk about in this very program, not just the book, but the program Beyond Procrastination. First of all, from the time that you were aware that you needed to or wanted to write this book until you completed your part, set aside the publisher, how long did that take?
About 3 years.
Did you feel, even as you were writing it, and I mean, with your example already mentioned, did you feel that you were at times procrastinating and that you probably could have written it in shorter period of time?
I probably could have.
But
then again, I'm sure I could have. But it's also that there's the rest of life, and I think that's why it's so important to look at what is happening, like at your goals that you want to achieve, what else is happening in your life in a holistic way. Mm-hmm. So if I had said, okay, I don't do anything else, I'm just writing the book, it probably would have been faster.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would have been as good, because every time I had another client that I was working with, all those experiences, and the book is all based on my experiences with clients and their successes. Every experience with a client sort of made this book richer. So in the end, that's where I'm talking about really understand yourself, understand your timing, that I trusted that timing, even though at times I thought I will never finish. It was just ongoing and more pages and more ideas and more this and more that. But in the end, at some point, it was all of a sudden done, and I was shocked.
There are a lot of things, of course, that keep us stuck. And, of course, you've been doing this for over 10 years, trying to help people to get unstuck and, you know, sort of get on with their lives, if you will, as it says in the subtitles, and discontinue, you know, stop postponing it. And of course, your book here obviously covers a wide range of topics. Managing your time, and of course, I asked about organization, fear, perfectionism, and there's an interesting aspect too. I remember early on in my broadcasting career, I could spend on a 30-second commercial, I could spend, and this was before computers, maybe an hour or two on one 30-second commercial, because I wanted things just so. And when the computer came along, I thought, man, this is going to make things so much faster. Well, it has at present, but back then when I first started using it, I was such a perfectionist that I was spending almost as much time on a 30-second commercial as I was when I wasn't using a computer to produce it. And I finally got to a place where I said, look, it's never going to be pristine perfect. You will always find something. So you have to find a place where you can be happy with it as it is without spending 2 hours. And I finally reached that place. And now, you know, I can knock out commercials in 10, 15 minutes after getting the initial recording done. So that aspect of perfectionism, I'm wondering how much we see in people, especially in the younger generation today, in terms of procrastination. Do you have clients in their teens, 20s, 30s who are perfectionists?
Well, some people are. I think there's a lot of pressure on young people to do everything just right. When you think about the expectations that they're facing, it's just so high. And I live in New York City, which is a high-pressured place, that you see kids as young as 5, 6 years already worried about if they're not perfect, will they get into the right schools? Or if it's not them, it's their parents who's putting pressure on. Mm-hmm. So I think in some ways, it's probably the younger generation is experiencing even more pressure, especially if you grow up in a middle-class family that expects you to go to college or even get higher education than that. So yes, I think there is a lot of pressure to be perfect.
Now, you are a life coach. You're also a sociologist, former college professor. And I find those that combination very interesting, especially the sociologist. But as a practice, as a life coach, and which is a fairly new title, I mean, probably in the latter part of the 1990s into the 21st century, it became more and more in vogue, if you will. Tell me, from your perspective, what is a life coach? I mean, how should we define that?
Well, it's a very, very young profession, so I think it's still very much in flux. And a lot of people just say they're life coaches. So you really have to see, like, what's the education. For example, I went to New York University for a one-year program, and there are other, like, really well-established programs in the country. But basically, you can just say you're a life coach. But what it means in general in terms of the approach, and that's, I'm just saying, like, look in, if you want to work with a life coach, really look into their background and talk to them and see, is it a good fit? Do I feel that I can work with this person? So just do your due diligence, basically. But life coaching itself is really about action, and it's about the future. So when you compare it to, let's say, talk therapy, it's a lot about, yes, or like changing behaviors or your life in the present, but you look a lot to your past. In coaching, you look to the future. You're defining goals, milestones, dreams, whatever it is, and then the life coach helps you to actually travel that path and bring out your strengths and help you develop.
If I went to a dentist who had bad teeth or to a mechanic whose car ran rough or didn't run at all and he was always working on it, I'd be very skeptical. What should I be looking for when it comes to the positive signs in a life coach from your perspective?
Well, I think that the really important thing is look at their education, look at their background, look at their life experience. And then talk to them and see. I mean, the thing is, and the term coaching is really taken from sports. Mm-hmm. Even if somebody is not an Olympic medalist, they might be great coaches. So, of course, sometimes people who have been professional athletes then go into coaching, but there are some people who don't necessarily have that background, but they're great teachers. So it's not always sort of, okay, I'm going to somebody who has achieve the same or even more in order to get advice from them. Or it's not really about advice. It's about really helping you think through things. So the most important or the more important thing is, does this person, does this life coach help you move forward? And if they don't, then don't hire them.
Beyond Procrastination is our subject. It's the title of the book, How to Stop Postponing Your Life. Renata Remen. Riemann is my guest, and we're talking about, you know, moving forward in our lives. But there are people, Renata, that they feel really stuck, especially here in the West. And maybe we might even break this down into other parts of the world with people that maybe you have worked with, other clients that have lived under different lifestyles. But here in the West, here in the United States in particular, there are people who feel they're stuck in their jobs, that they can't afford to just up and quit and start over with something. Some of them may be in their 50s, 60s, or even 70s. They want to do something, but they're afraid to do anything because if they upset the apple cart, they may wind up out on the street. Where would you start with somebody like that?
Well, first of all, I would double check, is that really true? So I would do, what I like to do with clients is a reality check. So is what you're thinking actually the case? Because very often, especially when fear comes in, the fears just make things very, very big. And I'm not somebody who discounts fear. I think fear is a very fine emotion that we should cultivate, but in a positive sense, because fear is there to warn us of problems or potential risk. So, for example, if you want to start your own business, which is something people often do in that kind of situation, really think it through. Because if you're not afraid, you're very likely to make mistakes. So fear helps us to keep us on our toes. But when fear becomes sort of like a independent reaction to almost just change in and of itself, then it's important to do the reality check. And it's like, okay, what am I afraid of? How likely is it that it actually will happen? What is the worst case scenario? So you can plan. So if the worst case scenario comes to pass, am I ready to deal with that? But also look at the best case scenario. So if my dream comes true or I overcome this fear, what is the positive outcome? And when you gather all that information, you probably will have an easier time to make a decision.
I've also am aware of, using my example prior of my wife's and my coming to Santa Barbara and that whole scenario, I remember when she came to me and said that she was scared. She was genuinely fearful that, you know, neither of us was working. What are we going to do? And I remember telling her that, you know, the wisdom that came to me was that when you come to the edge of a cliff, you jump and you trust. That's just what you do. Because standing on the cliff isn't going to get you anywhere from my perspective. But I had no fear.
Exactly, that's true.
You know, yes. I had no fear.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we took the next few steps, and of course, the next thing you know, boom, here we are. But what about someone who has made a change like this, and then they get caught up in that fear that we were just talking about? That stuckness, that stuck feeling is even a better way to put it, I think. And then they start second guessing the decisions that they've made in the past. And it's like, and I look at that and I go, what difference does that make? You already made the decision. You are where you are. So saying that that was a bad decision, how is that helping?
Well, I agree with you. That's why I really like to tell people, what's done, it's done. I mean, you can't change it. So what can you do right now? And
yeah.
I think that's one thing to really stress in a situation like that is what is within reach. So, yes, you can dream as big as you want to, but also what is realistic and what is within reach and what can you do right now? And regaining that sense of power, being in charge is really important. It might not be much. I mean, you could probably in these situations, you usually have to start slow. But if you can say, like, for example, with work is just, as your wife experienced, like a hostile environment. I can't quit right now for various reasons. So what can I do to counter that bad scenario? What can I do in my private life to get a sense, like a positive sense of aliveness, of joy, of really living my life? So whatever you can do to balance a situation where you feel more stuck, the more likely that kind of energy then will translate into the situation where you feel more stuck.
Well, all right, how about this? Here we are, November 1st, and we've got 2 months to the end of the year. Is it a good plan for us to begin now saying, look, this is what I would like to achieve, and I am going to sit down and my target goal, not for achieving it, but to begin the physical work, I'm going to start January 1, if you will. So over the next 2 months, I'm going to lay out the framework for how I'm going to do this. Is that, what do you think of that as a planner? Is that just more procrastination?
Well, just to be realistic, and I think that's always a good thing. I think some people get stuck in procrastination because they're very unrealistic about what they're planning. And so subconsciously, they know that it's not doable, so they don't start. So their conscious mind is like, yeah, I'm starting like right after Thanksgiving, I'm going to do this big new project. I'm like, it's Thanksgiving, and then it's Christmas. And so be realistic about what you can do when. So I think what you're laying out is to do a lot of thinking work about how to go about achieving your plan, and then starting on the 2nd of January is a great idea, because also use the energy that new beginnings bring. Like, spring is also a good time, because everything is starting to bloom and blossom, and there's a lot of energy in the air. Use that energy to also then further your plans and your goals. So, yes, plan now, start January 2nd, perfect plan.
Set it up, and at least that way you have a greater chance. Now, how about laying out the various steps that need to be achieved through the process, setting target dates that are reasonable, and when you hit those target dates, acknowledge them?
Yes, absolutely. I think one of the things that gets people very exhausted is that because they're behind, so the part of the problem of procrastination is the more you do it, the more you get depleted because you feel you're always running behind. And so often people I work with, when they come to me, they're totally exhausted. They never take breaks, and they never acknowledge when they actually do something. Because in their mind, it's like, yes, I did finish this, but the next five projects are lined up, so I can't even take a breath to acknowledge what I did and become aware of it and actually celebrate that. And that's where then procrastination sort of becomes a way of getting away from all that pressure. So it's a double whammy in a way, that we're procrastinating, and in order to not feel that pressure, we procrastinate more, which, of course, creates more pressure. So consciously taking time, and that, it can be just 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be anything big. But if you finish something, really acknowledge it, make it conscious, give yourself a little treat if you wish, like go for a coffee break or whatever, have a smoothie or whatever makes you happy, and then continue on. But have that sort of acknowledgement of, yes, I did that.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. That's very important to do. Milestones that we achieve, some of them we don't have control over, like birthdays and anniversaries. They just show up. But when you're doing something like this, yeah, it's really important to say, okay, I've achieved that. I don't have to go back and do that again. And I did it, and I accomplished it either on or before the date, you know, so I'm a little ahead of schedule. So, hey, I'm doing good. And even if you miss the deadline, but you're getting close to completion, you know, hey, celebrate it anyway when you do complete it. When we come back from our break, I want to talk about the social ramifications of procrastination in terms of society holding us back, or at least our perception, that's the better way to put it, I think, of society's perception, or our perception of society's role in our procrastination. We'll do that in just a couple minutes. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Renata Riemann, and she has a book. It's Beyond Procrastination. It's also a program, and we'll give you the website in just a moment. How to Stop Postponing Your Life. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
Procrastination, what does it mean to you? Are you a procrastinator, or are you beyond it? Maybe you've taken the program. We'd love to hear from you as well if you have. How to Stop Postponing Your Life. Renata Riemann is my guest. And Renata, I want to ask you about the world around us. I mean, I have to say that as a kid growing up, the outside world was not really conducive, if you will, was not real supportive to some of the things that I wanted to do with my life. And so I didn't do them. I'm not talking about my family per se. I'm talking about more, you know, we have greater influence as far as the school kids and things of this nature. And they carry a whole lot more weight. I remember writing in a journal many years ago that one of the big mistakes that we make is that there is this person that we are with 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if you will, and we give them maybe 10 minutes a month of our time and attention. And the outside world, we give 90% of our attention and allow them to influence us, when that first person knows better, and that's ourselves. What about that outside influence in the role of our procrastination?
I think it's one that's really underestimated, because when you look at books on procrastination or self-help books in that genre, it's very often people look at either sort of practical problems, which is time management, organization, scale, that kind of thing, which I also cover in the book, and things like fear and perfectionism that are more psychological reasons. But something that's really underrepresented there, and it's one of the things that I feel very strongly about, is sociocultural reasons. And partly it's because I'm a sociologist by training, so of course I have to look at society and culture and how it influences us. But I think it's very important to understand that these messages that come at us 24 hours a day, if you're willing to listen, about how we're supposed to behave, what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to do it. And so a lot of people have all these shoulds in their mind. But I should be working out every day of the week. I should be eating a vegan diet. I should be, and you can just filling the blanks with the should. But whenever you hear that should in your own mind, it actually points to the fact that you really don't want to do it. So every time a should comes up, it's the outside world sort of telling you how you should be, but it's not how you want to be. And therefore, it's very important to very consciously reconnect with who you are, what are your values, and what are your needs, and what are your authentic values and needs, and then approach the world again.
Well, I know that we are influenced from almost every corner. I mean, it used to just be the television, the radio, newspapers, and magazines, and now it's social media of almost every conceivable type. One of the reasons why I Twitter very, very little, I have no Facebook page, so if you're looking for me, you won't find me. I find the aspects of social media, for example, on Facebook, what little exposure I've had, you know, you have this feature called like, and people will ask you to like them. I don't know you. Now, as a humanitarian, I want to say that I like everybody. I'd like to be able to say that, but I don't. You know, there are some people that I really don't want to spend time around, and I have that right to, I'm going to use the word, discriminate or disassociate and associate. I can do either, and it's my choice, and I don't have to explain myself to anyone. I think that's one of the other things, too, that we get caught up in, is that we feel that we have to justify ourselves. We have to justify our path, our position, our thoughts, our ideas, our beliefs. And in fact, we don't. I mean, when we go asking people, if I was to ask you, Renata, what do you think of this, and share with you this thought, you know, what difference does it make what Renata thinks? It's my thought, and I like it. And so we get caught up in what other people are thinking about what we're doing or saying or being, and that also stops us cold.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, there is a basic human, it's not an instinct per se, but I think what we do as humans, we compare ourselves to others all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that in and of itself is not a bad thing. But I think what has happened over the last 50, 100 years is that we can compare ourselves to more and more people. It used to be just the little village or maybe a small town.
Yeah.
But now we all live in, or most of us live in urban areas. We have access to information from all over the world. And sites like Facebook or Twitter, especially Facebook, like something where you talk about your personal life, people start to compare themselves to everybody on Facebook and think that their life is just miserable compared to the wonderful life other people live. Of course, you have to keep in mind, they're only sharing the times when they're actually doing something interesting or presumably are happy, but you don't even know that. It's just, yeah, it's a lot of self-presentation that then we compare ourselves to, and a lot of people have said, no, I don't want to do that. It's just, I like my life, but I don't want to be exposed to so many other people and start comparing myself. So I think one of the things that is very important, and again, becoming self-aware, becoming aware of one's authentic values and needs, helps us with the non-comparison and to say, like, it's wonderful that you're successful, and I really compliment you on it, but I'm on my path, so my success looks different from your success.
Well, and I think that's a very important point that we might spend a little more time on in comparing, because sometimes we compare ourselves with others, and we're putting ourselves down. We're saying, I'm not as good as, or I don't have all of the things that they have, and I'm working just as hard, if not harder. Or we'll even see people who around us, we're aware of individuals in our workplace or in our neighborhood who are doing things that might even be illegal, and it seems on the surface that they're getting away with it. And it's like, I follow all the rules, and I'm just not getting anywhere. But look at them. They're breaking the rules, and look at everything that they have. Look at what they've achieved. Look where they've gone, on and on again in the comparisons. And so we start to, I guess you might say, start to chip away at our own integrity and then start to justify, well, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do this particular activity. It may be illegal. It may be unethical. But so what? And I think the best example of that, a story that I heard back in the late 80s, a news story about Motorola, one of the Motorola plants, and they were actually laying off about 1,000 people. And the reason they were doing that is because they had found that $1 million or more of materials had been pilfered from the plant, and they couldn't afford to keep all these people on. I have to wonder how many of those 1,000 people had actually stolen from the company and had gotten cut because of their own pilfering. They may not have gotten caught with their hand in the cookie jar, but it's a matter of speaking, the universe caught them and said, okay, here you go. This is the payoff.
Well, it's important to remember, though, that, yes, maybe some people got money or possessions or through unethical means. Does it mean that I want to follow that? No.
Right, right.
It's you have to work with your true self there. And the thing, too, is like, I get that very often with clients. They're like, well, but so-and-so is doing so much better than me. And I'm like, well, they're doing better in one area, but they might be doing much worse in another area. So we're only comparing ourselves, like sort of little aspects of ourselves with other people in a very small area. So so-and-so has more money. So they have more money, but they also might have no time with their family. They might have other issues that we're not aware of. So it's so easy in our minds to forget that everybody has burdens, everybody has successes, and everybody has moments of happiness and unhappiness. And I think part of the problem, what you were talking about earlier, when you look at the magazines where everybody, I mean, even the most beautiful people are airbrushed.
Mm-hmm.
How can
yeah.
you compete with that? That just because people are in that magazine doesn't make them happy human beings and doesn't make them feel that they have achieved something. They might feel very insecure about themselves. So it's important not to project these things that we want onto other people and then comparing ourselves to our own projection. And instead really focus, what do I want? What is important to me? And how can I make that real? How can I make that reality?
Is from your observations, is procrastination and the forms that it takes, as we've described here thus far, is this pretty well universal around the planet, or are there other cultures that we just don't fully understand that they don't have procrastination because the system that's been set up pushes everybody to continue to move forward?
No, that's pretty much universal.
Okay.
Sorry. In case you had dreams of maybe immigrating to another country, yes, no, it's everybody procrastinate. It's probably different how people procrastinate, and it might also be different that some people don't consider postponing something a problem. It's just they don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what the cultural differences are in terms of how do you define success. What are the main goals that are rewarded in other cultures or here too? The American culture rewards at this point very much money. So if you want to get money, you'll get a lot of support to push for that. In other cultures, that might not be such a big goal, or at least not at the expense of a personal life or family or the community. So that there are differences there. But I think it's also... It's just modern life has added to procrastination on many levels. Of course, the most obvious of the last 10, 15 years is technologies. Mm-hmm. So on your smartphone, you have access to information about anything and everybody in this world. And then that can be extremely distractive. But it's even a longer-term thing. I think it's really started probably with the Industrial Revolution, because all of a sudden... it's not just you're born into a family, you're living on the land, you're farming the land or working on the land, that there were relatively few choices that you had to make. Relatively few. I mean, there's still a lot, but fewer choices than now. And when you think over the last 100 years or so, the complexity of life has so much increased, and our reliance on other people has increased. So there are very few people nowadays who are really self-sufficient. We get products and services from all over the world. We're totally intertwined and networked throughout the world. And we have so many choices that when you talked about younger people, that when you, if you're 13, 14, 15 right now, and you're asked, so what do you want to become? I don't know how many professions there are. So, and the other complexity is it used to be, at least the last 50 years or so, if you became a doctor or a lawyer, or an accountant, those are pretty secure professions to go into. But nowadays, we don't know, with technology changing everything, we don't know if that actually will be still a good idea or if computers are going to take over. So the complexity of life, the more decisions we have to make, the more likely as human beings we're going to procrastinate.
Hmm. Yeah, this is, to me, very interesting because there are times when I can't ever remember intentionally putting off an interview. I enjoy doing them so much, I don't like putting them off. I don't like them rescheduled. I don't like them reset for any reason, even if it's something that I have no control over, a power outage or an emergency or what have you. Mm. And so I find the discussion of this very fascinating. And I'm wondering, is you've sort of answered my question already, at least as far as going over the last 100, maybe even 150 years. As far as you are aware, I know procrastination has been around since man's been on the planet, but would you say that it is not as prevalent prior to the Industrial Revolution as it has been since and then into the technological revolution, as you've already described?
Well, that's my sense. Of course, we can't go back and ask people.
Yeah.
And yes, it's been around for a long time, and there are references to postponing things throughout literature, but... I think it's just a bit more complicated, and I think it's also when you live more with nature, let's say like in an agrarian society, mm-hmm. You have a lot of deadlines.
Yeah.
So once the winter comes, if you live in a colder climate, you have to have the harvest in. It's not an option, otherwise
yeah.
you'll starve.
Yeah.
So maybe some people did starve and mistimed things. I'm sure there are people who just said, like, oh, I don't feel like it today, so I'm not going to do anything. It's not that, but I think it was just much more timed by the outside world. And now we have the freedom, but also the responsibility to take care of our own timing. And that makes it harder.
Let's talk a little bit about, I think you've touched upon it a little, the mental or psychological effects of procrastination on an individual.
It can be quite devastating. I mean, it's one thing, I work with a lot of people actually very high functioning in their lives, but they have one or two things that they just don't seem to be able to get to by themselves. So I help them with that. And that's usually not that devastating, although it can be if it's like your life's dream, like for some people it's going back to school or getting their PhD, and not doing that really feels like failure to them. So even though it's just one aspect of their life, it has become such a big symbol for success in general that that can be devastating as well. But the more areas people have or the more goals people have that they postpone constantly, the more the joy of life is reduced. And I like that expression because happiness is fleeting. Happiness is something that comes and goes at random times often. But joy or enjoyment of life is something that's much more foundational. And people are often robbed of that if they procrastinate a lot.
How has your level of procrastination changed since you have put this program and this book together?
Well, the funny thing is, like, I always thought of myself as not procrastinating much, because I grew up in Germany, and Germans are very, you learn early on, you do your timetable and you do it. No questions asked, you just go for it. But of course, Germans also procrastinate. But culturally, you think of yourself as less of a procrastinator, I guess. But once I started developing this program, then writing the book, I realized I procrastinate much more than I ever thought. But the good news is I usually do take my own advice and get to the bottom of it and find out what is the real reason right now. What I said before, it's like really ask yourself, what is stopping me right now? What is in the way? And if you have to wait 5 minutes in stillness, that's fine. Really ask your entire being, like, what is in the way, and usually get an answer.
It's fascinating to me to deal with these kinds of things. There are certainly certain aspects of one of our lives that we procrastinate. I don't think it's across the board in one person's life. I procrastinate on everything. Because if that were the case, then I would not get to work on time, I wouldn't get home on time, wouldn't pick up my wife, wouldn't go to the grocery store and do that, wouldn't take care of the animals, and I mean, the list goes on and on. But we selectively, even if it's unconscious, we selectively choose those things that we choose to procrastinate on. Is there a psychology to that in terms of sort of defining that, or is that, again, that going back to you asking that one question, why? What is it that's causing me to put this off, to procrastinate?
I see. I would take it one instance at a time, because very often, and it's surprising to people, especially those who say, oh, I procrastinate all the time, there's actually a self-assessment or multiple self-assessment exercises in the book where you can really see, okay, concretely, where do I procrastinate? Or when I talk to people, they ask me, so what do you do for a living? And I tell them about this focus on overcoming procrastination. And they said, oh, yeah, I'm procrastinate all the time. And it's like, is that really true? And I was like, no, actually, I'm really good at this and this and this and this. I have no trouble with it. But I hate going to the DMV and all these official things that I procrastinate on. So it's like, okay, so it's just you can clearly define this area as one of your procrastination areas. And as I said, each instance of procrastination might have a different root. So maybe dealing with a DMV is just you hate to waste your time because you know that you will stand online. So what you can do is just bring work or bring something to read or something that makes it bearable. But you might have another issue with, let's say, doing your taxes. That might have nothing to do with that, but it might be about fear. Fear of having, like, somebody question you or overestimating or underestimating or putting the wrong numbers on paper. So then you look at, okay, how can I deal with that fear? And that might be hiring an accountant instead of doing it yourself. So each situation might have a very different reason for why you're procrastinating.
It seems to me like, you know, we'll certainly come up with a lot of reasons. And you use the word reason, and maybe the word I'm about to use is inappropriate only from the standpoint that it doesn't make the situation any better. I say excuses, the excuses that we tell ourselves to
right.
not do something.
Well, that's very interesting because at the beginning of the book, I actually talk about that. It's when I talk about reasons, it's not the excuses in our heads,
mm-hmm.
but the actual reasons, the reasons that in actual reality stop us. Because, yes, in our minds we have tons of excuses, like why we can't do something, but that might not be the real reasons. So it's very important to distinguish between those two.
Mm, okay. So it seems to me that... as we tend to do on this program, usually at the beginning of the program, it seems to me very appropriate for us to define our terms as we begin this process of going through and getting through to stop postponing our lives so that we can, because if we don't know the meanings of certain things, like again, the answer to that question, why am I putting this off? What is it that's holding me back? And it can even be, I would think, even environmental or and environmental in the context of your surroundings, even the people around you, the reason why you're putting it off. I have one condition that which drives me up the wall, and I would not do something if I had one or more people standing behind me watching. I would stop. I don't know why that bugs the daylights out of me, but it does. To have someone standing over me like that and watching what I'm doing, even though they're just there, they're observing. They just want to see what I'm doing. It's like, ah! It's like, for some, nails on a chalkboard.
Also, I think it's very important to take yourself seriously there.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people try to change themselves. Mm-hmm. And like, the should. When the should pops up, you know something is going on. I should not be bothered, but you are.
Yeah.
So take that seriously. So arrange sort of your work setups that nobody will look over your shoulder. So it's very important to take yourself seriously and not think that you, just because it's not what other people feel, that you are strange or you shouldn't do that or you should be able to deal with it. Adapt to what works best for you.
Are there some typical causes, if you will, or reasons for procrastinating based upon age? In other words, the older set. Because some people say that the reason why I don't like going walking, and I love walking. I love the fact that I can walk from the radio station to the beach. To me, that is fabulous.
Lovely.
Whereas when I was living in Phoenix, it took me 20 years to walk to the beach instead of 20 minutes. But I don't like people in front of me or behind me as I'm walking. It's like, because I don't know what they're going to do, and they do the craziest things sometimes, and I don't want to run into them. I don't want them to run into me. You know, it's like I want this giant bubble around me to keep them.
Well, maybe that's where you have to get like a Popemobile kind of safety zone.
It's not a bad idea. But I'm just curious, I was going to say that what some people say is, well, that's just because you're getting older. And I'm going, what? I've never liked that. Just because I'm 55 that has nothing to do with it. I didn't like it when I was 25, 35, or 45. So it has nothing to do with age. But I'm curious, are there certain other triggers or reasons why certain ages will procrastinate versus other ages that don't use that reasoning?
Well, it could be just, some of it is just developmental. So, mm-hmm. for example, being at college invites procrastination.
Yeah.
Like the first time you're away from home, some people, of course, stay at home, but let's say you're living in a new place. There are all these new people to meet. There's so many offerings at the college. There are all these things that have certain deadlines, but they don't seem to be like too close. So unless you're a day or two away from the exam or the due dates, it might not be front and center for you. So that's an age where a lot of procrastination happens. And it's also a lot of decision-making. I mean, you decide potentially for the rest of your life, although nowadays that's not true to that extent, but still you decide really what will happen the next 5 to 10 years probably in your life, depending on what you do there. So the bigger the stakes, the more likely we will procrastinate. And I think, like, the older people get, usually they get actually better at not procrastinating, but there might be a time, like, around retirement where things get really difficult again because there are major life changes, and how do you deal with them? Do you have a plan for what you want to do after your retirement? Or maybe you can't retire at all because, given the situation, that you just don't have enough money not to work. So there are different times of life when it's just that your developmental stage makes it much harder not to procrastinate.
Is there a good time to procrastinate?
Yes. But unfortunately, we usually only know afterwards. Well, I think procrastination, I was just talking to my neighbor, and he's a writer, and he said, like, he doesn't call it procrastination. He calls it, what did he say? Destation.
Oh.
So just learn about yourself. I think the big thing is self-awareness and really going through the process of developing the Beyond Procrastination program and now writing the book. I've become much better at reading my postponement and understanding that, okay, I just can't do something today. To accept that there is a reason, even though I'm not conscious of it, but that there is a valid reason why I can't do it today.
So,
and unless I have a really tight deadline, it's probably better not to work on it because something is happening in the back of my mind that's the gestation period, that probably if I do wait, I'll get a better product.
I've taken that tack with interviews such as this one where the more times the interview is rescheduled, and I wasn't tracking it that closely in the very beginning, but the more times an interview was rescheduled, when the interview finally took place, it was better than I could ever have expected. I mean, it just turned out really well. I mean,
that's great.
I mean, so I never worry too much about that from that standpoint. I'm curious, though. Are you saying that everybody procrastinates, or have you come across rare individuals who don't?
I've never met such a person. They might exist, but not in my universe. and as you said, sometimes procrastinating or postponing something is actually for the better. So mm-hmm. I think people, I mean, if you don't procrastinate, I just think that probably your life must be incredibly regimented. Because as soon as we start something new or as soon as something more complicated comes along, we often need more time. And we underestimate often, especially long projects, we tend to underestimate how long it takes. And the funny reverse thing is true, too, that very often small things, we overestimate how long it takes. So we think, oh, no, I can't empty out the dishwasher because it takes so long. It's like, no, it just takes a few minutes, okay? You can do it now. But more complex and bigger projects usually take longer than you think. So it's important to really chunk it down, create milestones and that kind of thing to become more realistic about how long something will take.
Hmm. I think that's extremely important, and to that end, obviously, you're cutting yourself a little slack in that respect. I mean, you're giving yourself credit for acknowledging that, hey, this has to take a certain length of time. I mean, I would use case in point that if you are building a building and you've just poured the concrete for the foundation, you can't start putting the walls up until that foundation has cured. And if you do it too soon, well, then you guess what? You get to start all over again.
Yes, and I think it's also there's a lot of pressure or like for some reason I think the media and advertising has just created the sense that you can have instant gratification on anything.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
It's not instant gratification. It's nice if you want to like have a lollipop.
Yeah.
But instant gratification won't happen if you want to get a PhD or build a business. There's no instant gratification in that except every little step that you're taking. So that's why it's so important to really look at what you've achieved already in order to keep the momentum. But you won't be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company after 2 years working for that company, unless, of course, you've already been at a high level. But a lot of young people, I've heard when I talk to managers, they're like, this young generation, they come into the company and they think because they've been there for 2 years, they should be in the upper echelon. And no, it takes time. And that's good. It should take time.
Yeah. I've been doing this for 35 plus years and I'm still working my way up, only they're very tiny steps, and that's okay.
No, absolutely.
It's very okay. Well, yeah. This is very interesting. I'm fascinated by the aspect of procrastination. I mean, they're certainly bad. Well, I'll use the terminology anyway, bad procrastination, because it slows down what you think should be your progression, or it makes you feel as though you're not getting anywhere. But hey, you've been putting off doing this. It could be timing. There's also good procrastination, as we've just talked about. And it's, as you've said, it's extremely important for us to do that self-evaluation, which I am going to venture is laid out not only in your program, but in the book, Beyond Procrastination.
Thank you.
I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program, sharing your story and your book, Beyond Procrastination. Renata, I have three more questions to ask you that I ask all of my guests at the end of the program as we wrap things up. First of all, who is Renata Remen?
I have no idea. It will unfold. I know that's not the answer that you're expected to say, and I don't have an elevator pitch when you ask me such a fundamental question. I'm looking forward to becoming who I am.
Yeah, well, and I will let you know there is no right or wrong answer. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
What I want to achieve is for people to be able to achieve their dreams in a way that makes sense to them, and not through being hard on themselves, but being self-compassionate, and by embracing themselves to really rediscover the joy of life. That's very dear to my heart.
And who inspires you?
My clients. It's just such a joy to work with them and to see their growth and see them achieve what they want to achieve and become very fully rounded human beings that embrace life.
Well, Renata Remen, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program and sharing this wonderful information. And what is the website where people can go, check out more information, get in touch with you, and maybe ask you further questions that we didn't touch upon?
Yes, please visit freshlifecoaching.com. That's freshlifecoaching.com. Or you can also just use beyondprocrastination.com. That will take you there. So beyondprocrastination.com. It might be easier to remember.
I like that. I do like the website, freshlifecoaching.com, because it sounds to me like, in a manner of speaking, that's kind of what you will acquire after going through this and having a better understanding of self and beginning to move forward and doing the things that you've always wanted to do but you kept putting off. And now all of a sudden, you are living a life that, you had only dreamed of before.
Yes, and sometimes it gets even better than you even dreamt of.
Yeah, could be extraordinary. Once again, yeah. Renata, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Richard. It was a pleasure.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.